Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. Sorry we're a little late here. We are talking shop with Denisa from International Man, the one and only. I just met her the other day. We won't say where, at an undisclosed location with a bunch of freedom-minded individuals, a great group. And she was talking to me about some research that she's been doing for none other than Mr. Doug Casey himself, an International Man. So I said, why don't you come on the channel? All the rebel capitalists are interested in commodities. We believe, or at least I believe, that we're in a long-term commodity super cycle. And I just look at the macros, most of you guys know. But Denisa actually dives into the micro stuff and analyzes the individual companies. So we thought, why not come on to the show and go over a company that you recently analyzed? Because maybe, just maybe, it's something that we would want to put on our watch list. So on that note, Denisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you, George. Pleasure to be here.
All right. Now, why don't you tell us about your background with International Man?
Go ahead. Well, I should start by saying that I am a big fan and follower of Doug since I was 20, and I attended one of his summer camps in Lithuania. And I've been there a couple of times. I tried to pitch him various stuff in Romania. It didn't work out. And I kept following him since, and we kept in touch. And then in 2020, when, you know, the whole madness was all around, I wrote him a long email, a bit philosophical, I think. It was probably the only true email that I wrote to him, other than, hello, Doug, how are you? I hope you're doing well, and, you know, empty stuff. He suggested that we start a collaboration. So that's how I started to write for International Men. There is actually one paid subscription newsletter. It's called Contrarian Insider. And the main featured writer is David Stockman. He writes all the macro view every month. Doug provides also some of his commentary on the back of that macro view. And then there is one section of portfolio analysis. We call it Contrarian Insider Model Portfolio, which kind of provides suggestions for investments on the back of this macro view that both David and Doug share.
Yeah, very similar framework, very similar worldview. So I guess the next question is, do you have Doug's logo tattooed on your leg?
Not yet.
And you know why I'm asking that question?
No.
Josh, why am I asking that question?
You have it. Have a tattoo.
Josh, you want to chime in here, buddy? I see you in the green room. Okay, he must be on the phone with someone else. I see him in the green room right there. But the reason that's kind of an insider joke is because the very first time that I met Josh, he has a similar story. He'd been following my content. And it was at a meetup I did for my birthday back in 2021. And Josh's mom actually came up to me and said, look, my son is your biggest fan. You've got to meet him. And I said, okay, well, that's very nice. You know, in the back of my mind, I'm saying, okay, a lot of people say that. And it's very kind of them. But I don't know what would make Josh my biggest fan. So she says, Josh, you know, come over here. And we're at this bar that I rented for the night. And by the way, Josh, I don't think you were 21, so I don't know how the hell you got in. But anyway, Josh comes over. I think he was wearing shorts. He had to have been wearing shorts or whatever. So he pulls up, he introduced himself, and he pulls up his pant leg. And sure enough, he had the Rebel Capitalist logo tattooed on his leg. So
wow,
that's the backstory. There you go.
And that was a permanent.
The rest is history.
That was a permanent tattoo.
Yeah. Josh, you haven't had that laser removed yet, have you?
No, not yet.
Now you fast forward to today, and next week we're taking a trip actually to see Doug. We're doing the CBDC Road Trip to Freedom Challenge. Josh and me, where we're driving from Santiago to Buenos Aires. But anyway, let's get back to the topic at hand. So let's shoot over to your most recent report and reveal what this stock is that you've been analyzing and why it's on your watch list. Josh, can you see this?
Yeah, we can all see it.
Okay, great. So we'll let the cat out of the bag here. It's BHP. Is that correct, Denisa?
That's right. BHP Group.
Okay, great. So what brought you to, like, when you're doing your research, what brought you to this company in the first place?
Well, we discussed about the macro view that both Doug and David share. And I would summarize that in probably three trends that the whole portfolio kind of invests in. One is geopolitical shifts. You know, the power structures globally are changing. And that typically comes with a period of riots, wars, financial collapse, probably, which is the second trend that Doug has been talking about for the past more than two decades, probably. He often refers to this as the Greater Depression,
kind of
says how bad he sees things to unfold. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing is wokeism, which is refers to this powerful anti-human agenda that they are vilifying everything to do with a human being. I mean, they basically say, you know, you're a human being, that you're polluting the Mother Earth, and therefore you need to kill yourself. So, of course, they don't say this specifically, but, you know, all the actions point exactly towards this direction. So one of the things that they are vilifying is the primary sources of energy that are, you know, the foundation of our society, of our civilization. And when you take all these trends together, the only thing that you'd want to own, if these things come true, is our tangible assets, like food, commodities, precious metals.
Right, because we can assume the supply is going to be decreasing due to their Marxist-Malthusian agenda.
Exactly. I mean, there are already shifts in supply chains and, you know, the shipping routes between different countries have extended a lot. There is also a huge analysis there when you look at the vessels.
Do you want me to go to a different slide?
No. Just, I was here. Well, what I'm trying to say is that the macro view is this one, right? This is what you want to own.
Yeah,
so how do you invest? How do you position yourself? And there are multiple stocks and funds that are being suggested in Contrarian Insider. And one of the latest one was BHP. Why? Because it is a commodity giant, basically. So if you want to go long on commodities, then BHP is probably a safe way.
And what commodities do they produce?
Are they the
main commodities, I should say?
They have four segments. One is copper, which includes copper, silver, uranium, and some gold. But the majority of it, the main commodity, is copper. They have iron ore. They have some coal, both metallurgical and energy coal. And they recently went into potash mining, and they will be producing potash as well for fertilizers. So it has a good, decent diversification, especially relative to Rio Tinto or Vale, which are in the similar space, but they are not as diversified. We particularly liked the exposure on coal and copper versus the other companies. So back to commodities, I think it's good that we start with the big picture, right?
Am I on the right slide, Denisa? Which slide do you want me on?
Yeah, that's it. That's the right one. So
the tangibles, intangibles.
Yes, I think that's a famous chart. Kind of shows what is the where the value lies when you take the split between in S&P 500 in terms of, you know, where the money goes primarily, and you see that the value allocated to tangibles versus intangibles has tremendously decreased over the last four decades.
Right.
I think in the 70s, you had around 80%+ valuation for tangibles. Whereas most recently, I checked the 2020 chart, and now it reached to just 10%. Probably as of 2023, it must be even lower. The question is this sustainable? And if we go a bit on a philosophical tangent, right, we still have our carbon suit. We need stuff in order to eat, to survive, to sustain our civilization. Even technology needs commodities. Anything needs commodities. So I would expect that this ratio would tend towards a more equilibrium in the longer run. So that's one argument.
Yeah.
The other one,
and then is, this next chart kind of is a different way to look at that first chart.
Yes, I think this chart is absolutely brilliant. This from these guys, I cannot pronounce the full name, but it's Göring and Rosen something. But they have brilliant research in commodity space. And what they've done is they show in this chart the ratio between the commodity index and the market ratio. Using Dow Jones as a proxy. And if you look at the chart, what you see is that historically, every time the ratio was below 0.2, commodities was deeply undervalued.
Right.
And then what followed was a huge bull market in commodities. So instead of buying NVIDIA and all these other magnificence that are way overvalued, you know, if you're looking for value, I think commodities is a good space. So I think that's
that is really interesting.
Then right. the other chart shows that comes from Chris McIntosh. He wrote an article for International Men, and he showed how the commodity producers have been starved by capital over the last decade, more than a decade, actually.
And that goes back to wokeism and ESG.
That's right. And it's only getting worse. So what I'm trying to say here, now, if you think about commodities is a capital intensive business, and it's not like, you know, you're snapping the fingers and the mine happens tomorrow. Even if we immediately increase this capital into resource discovery and exploration, it will still take a long time until you actually find value and mine it and take it out of the ground. So it hasn't even, I mean, it barely starts picking up, but probably it's not going to be a lot of incentive there because of this green madness. I work a lot with banks in my other jobs, and I know that banks have are starting to introduce a carbon score as part of their risk scoring models.
Oh, yeah, like Larry Fink did with BlackRock, like an ESG score or whatever.
Exactly. But that's because the banks themselves, they are going to report on their own carbon footprint based on how much loans they give to the different companies and individuals, right?
Yeah.
So they don't have a strong incentive to finance dirty producers, you know, dirty commodity producers. They want green stuff so that they can lower their carbon footprint. So it's even, you know, it's even less capital in the future if we think about it this way. And I think what the impact is, and BHP actually already does this. What the producers would do, they divest all of the, you know, not so good assets, non-tier one assets, and they only keep the creme de la creme, the best assets, where they know that they have good margins, and they know that they can allocate some of that margin in order to pay for whatever crazy regulations or taxes that will be imposed on them. So that means even more pressure on the supply. And then when you go to the demand side, which is your chart right here.
That's for the example, primary energy. Okay, you're right. Consumers, got it.
Yes. So if you look at the demand, I mean, if anything, the demand for any type of commodities, but let's look at energy here, it's expected to increase. Right now, what this chart shows is not very visible, but what it shows is that China is the top energy primary energy consumer, followed by the U.S., nothing surprising here. But when you look at India, which has the same population as China, I mean, how much is going to take until India will want to increase their standard of living, at least where China is today, or Indonesia, Pakistan, these countries that have a lot of people, but they are not even here in this chart. So if anything, the demand will probably increase. But say it doesn't increase, right? Say it doesn't even increase. If you look at the last 5 years in Czech, what are the primary sources of energy consumption worldwide? And that's the next chart, this chart here.
Yeah.
You see that the consumption, the level of the demand hasn't really changed much, except for 2022. We don't have the 2023 chart, but it's pretty much the same as 2022. So what I'm trying to say here is that it seems that the demand for primary sources of energy is quite inelastic. So when you have a tight supply and an inelastic demand, then there will be a time where the demand side is going to pay whatever price in order to secure supply, because they just cannot run without oil, coal, and gas, as the globalists want us to believe.
Hey guys, I want to invite each and every one of you to join me May 31st through June 2nd in Orlando for Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the annual conference I do, and this year it's going to be absolutely incredible. We're going to have some of your favorites there as speakers, guys like Jeff Snyder, Mike Green, Real Estate, Kenny McElroy. We're going to have Robert Barnes. They're talking about freedom and liberty. Even Rich Cooper is going to be there discussing red pill issues. This event is all about giving you the intel, the insider information you need to not only survive 2024, but thrive. The whole reason I created this event was to give you the tools you need to build the future you deserve for yourself and your family. This is an event you are not going to want to miss. So to get more information, go to rebelcapitalistlive.com. You can see a full list of speakers we've had in the past. You can see clips from past events. And most importantly, you can get your tickets. As we get closer to the event, the tickets go up in price. So you're going to want to get those ASAP at rebelcapitalistlive.com. And we will see you in Orlando, May 31st through June 2nd. Let's get back to, so green phobia, green phobia, or is that green hysteria? More pressure to, that's probably a better way to say it. Green hysteria adds more pressure on transitionary metals, such as copper, which it sounds like is right up BHP's wheelhouse.
That's right. The point here is that it's not just energy. Is if you look into transition metals, and it's not just copper, it's all transition metals. This big push towards electrification is going to add more pressure and create more structural changes in the supply and demand for these metals as well. And it doesn't matter whether the green projects are efficient. They are not. People aren't really using EVs, electric vehicles, but it's such a big push and so much subsidies for electric vehicles that they get produced. And in order to produce them, look how much copper you need. For the upper chart shows that it's more than double the amount of copper necessary for an electric vehicle compared to a conventional car. And if you look at the energy sources, if you want to transition from natural gas and coal, as they want us to do, then it takes more than double the amount of copper for solar and onshore wind, and more than, I think, quadruple for offshore wind. It's not just that, it's any project. You know, you see Schlumberger or all these other big giants that are in the dirty business. They are investing in all sorts of technologies like carbon capture, any type of things that would reduce their carbon footprint. And that requires copper. That requires commodities. And I think that the most interesting chart is this one. It comes from Sprott. And it shows what a huge increase in investments in electrified transport, renewables, and power grids happened over the last 4 years. And I mean, all this capital gets injected into projects that will require commodities in order to...
Yeah, the way I always look at it is everything that you see on this chart requires digging more holes in the ground.
That's right. Exactly.
Bottom line. So you want to go long, holes in the ground. All right. So now we're getting to BHP specifically.
Yeah.
So tell us your analysis here, the micro analysis.
Yeah. So BHP is a giant, right? The reason why BHP, we chose BHP as opposed to Rio or Vale, as I said, was mostly because of the diversification across multiple commodities. And then if you look at, we also checked Glencore, for example, it has much better margins and solvency ratios, BHP, compared to these guys. Now, it ain't cheap. It's not dirt cheap, as you can see from the chart. But
where's the, you had the PE ratio in here somewhere, didn't you? I think it was like 19.
Yes. The PE ratio is 19.
Okay, so where revenue breakdown? Well, I guess we can just go in order here, so I'm not just...
Yeah, so basically we already covered this chart that you're showing here, that revenue breakdown. Let's go to revenue breakdown, I think.
Okay.
That's a good one. Wait, I've already covered the segments, right? So you can see what's the majority of the revenue and where it comes from. They have started to divest from certain metallurgical coal mines. And so that's why you see a drop in the revenue. But that's not only because of that. It's because the underlying prices of the commodities have decreased. But and go to the other chart just to finish with the revenue. And you see also that this is where they make money from. So the majority of their revenue come from China. So that's also one of the risks of this company. If China goes bust and they slow down, then for sure BHP is going to get hurt.
But that's your buying opportunity.
Exactly. But the biggest reason is that they are a cash cow. I mean, if you look at their history of free cash flows, again, you see a drop here this year, mostly because of the drop in the underlying commodities, but they are still making money. It's not immediate, this chart with the dividend, but you see that they have been paying steady dividends for more than a decade now. So that's a good company to own for the long term. In terms of profitability, they have very decent margins. I mean, you look, return on equity, gross margin is, operating margins, EBITDA margins, they are all double digits.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of segment performance, so if you dig deeper and you check how well they do with iron ore segment, copper segment, met coal, energy coal, they have very good margins. The nickel segment has negative margins. That's because the nickel price went south, and they do expect a structural. They expect this to persist, but. Nickel contribution to revenue is probably around 1% or less. It's insignificant for their business right now, right. But it provides them a big advantage when this is going to change in the future. And as I said, potash is a new. They are building a mine now. I think the first go live of the mine is going to be somewhere in 2026. Potash is used in fertilizers and that's food. So that's something that we're very, very bullish on. In terms of debt levels, very sustainable. You have around 54% debt to equity ratio. That's quite sustainable for a company like BHP. Long history of dividend payments. As I said, if you go on the next slide, you see, I only found this chart, but if you go back on the past 15 years, they have steady dividend payments. And I think the lowest yield was around 1.9%. And the recent one is around 5.8% or 5.7%, 5.8%. Yeah, that's right.
I'd be curious what their nominal dividend payment was back during the GFC.
We can check that.
That would be interesting because you see this chart. Like when I look at this chart, I just see opportunity right here in 2009. That's what I see in this chart. And think about that. The price goes from, do you have what the dividend yield was in, well, I guess that really doesn't matter because we don't know if the dividend itself went down. But, you know, it's 70. Just let's assume for a moment that they didn't cut their dividend yield and the price goes down, to 30. That means your dividend yield more than doubled. And then you can ride that for the next leg of the commodity super cycle.
Yeah. When was that? I have it right here. It was 4%. It wasn't that bad.
What was the actual dollar amount in the nominal yield?
0.41.
So 41 cents?
41 cents. Yeah.
And then what did it go down to in 2009?
No, that was it. The lowest payment was 0.17, and that was 2006. Then
does it show what it was in 2009?
So in 2009 was 0.41, and it increased ever since.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, it declined in 2016, but yeah.
So we got the valuation at. So how do they justify the 19 PE?
What do you mean? How do they justify?
Or how would you justify it? The valuation.
The price that the market pays now for BHP relative to the earnings that they have.
Yeah, but I mean, if I looked at 19 for a commodity producer, that seems pretty expensive. So is the answer because they're expecting, or you as an analyst would expect substantial future growth?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look again, if you want to find a very conservative company to invest your money in the commodity space, there aren't many options that have good valuations, good solvency, good liquidity. BHP is one of them. So I think the market rewards them for this.
Oh, so they give a little bit of a premium there. Okay. So at the summary, it's the right sector, diversified tier one property. Are all of their assets in Australia?
The majority of them. So they... the potash business is going to be in Canada, and they have a few mines in South America as well, and I think they have something in Africa as well.
Okay, so and then you point that out here, number seven, with the risks would be political, social, regulations. Yeah,
that's because if you look at Australia, it's a bit woke, right?
How about Canada, for heaven's sakes?
Yeah, that's right.
Jeez. With Trudeau, my goodness gracious.
Yeah, so most likely this company is going to have a lot of social pressure being in the commodity space. And they will have a lot of expenses to take care of in order to clean up their reputation and, you know.
Yeah, and abide by all the wokies.
Yeah, but actually they explicitly mention, there is an entire paragraph that I quoted from their financial report, and they explicitly mention that one of their biggest risks is social pressure and political regulations in the space of green energy.
Huh. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, you can't hedge that out. We're talking about FX risk, and they can hedge that with derivatives. But I don't know how you would hedge that. But anyway, so Denisa, tell us where we can find out more about what you do. Can we go to International Man? Or are you on Twitter? Or where do you hang out as far as social media?
I personally don't, but anybody who is interested in this can go to internationalman.com, look for Contrarian Insider, or subscribe to the public to the free newsletter. It's a ton of value there. That's it. Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. And next time you come on, I'm going to expect you to have a tattoo of Doug Casey's face somewhere on your body.
Okay. I will give some serious thought about it. Yeah.
All right, guys, on that bombshell, enjoy the rest of your day. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. And we'll see you in the next video.